Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, welcome. Yes, we are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. Molly is on vacation this week, so we are so excited to have a couple of guest chicks in studio with us. Susan Kochevar, welcome.
Thank you.
And Sue Kinfield, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Now, we are the AmeriChicks, and, you know, we talk about issues. We look at these issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And our goal is to educate and inspire and engage. And so I am really excited to have you ladies in here. You are both entrepreneurs, and you are women after my own heart.
Well, thanks, Kim.
So great to have you here. So just a little information. Susan Kochevar is a great friend of the AmeriChicks. She's an entrepreneur. She has run for public office probably going to do that one again, right?
Probably so.
I kind of like that. You're considering it anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, considering it. But you are a small business person. You have the 88 Drive-In Theater, which is the historic 88 Drive-In Theater right up here in Commerce City. Mm-hmm. And how long has that been in your family, Susan?
It's been in my family for 41 years. This is our 41st season.
Wow. Congratulations. That's terrific.
That is really cool. So there must be a secret recipe for popcorn.
There is. I'm not telling.
Okay. And Sue Kinfield, you also are an entrepreneur. You have your own business, See It Thrive.
Yep.
And tell us just a little bit about that.
So I specialize in driving down drama and dysfunction. You know, really it's being the human potential maximizer in organizations and teams with leaders, you know, helping people understand how not to engage in stuff that's not going to advance their individual organizational success from an emotional intelligence, behavioral intelligence perspective. It's just how the human condition can often get in the way.
Well, you know, Sue, looking at what's going on in America today, I think you've got a lot of job security.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I pray a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Well, ladies, I really appreciate you being in studio. We have a lot of great guest chicks, but you are two of my favorites. So thank you for being here. And we hope Molly's having a great vacation. I got a picture. She was fishing this morning.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
nice.
So hopefully she's having a great time. So let's jump into some current events. A couple of things that's going on. Sue, I saw this as I was driving in today. I heard that in Dallas, I think maybe even during the night, they're going to take down some additional Confederate statues. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned about that because while it's kind of hiding under this, you know, idea of these people stood for slavery, which, you know, we put that behind us a long time ago.
Sure.
I think that it's really more, for me, I think it's more about power. Mm. And if these people really cared about people, I feel that they would be doing something about all the violence in Chicago.
Right.
So, but what do you think about it?
It distresses me as well to know that city governments or whoever are going in the middle of the night under the cloak of darkness and removing these statues. And I can understand how they might argue it's for safety, we don't want to have any protests. But I'm really concerned with that they're on board with trying to erase history, to mask it, to put it away somewhere so it can't be seen. For me, I think those statues are an important reminder of how many people fought to do away with some of the practices that were so prevalent at that time. It's a reflection of how far we've come, mm-hmm, as a society, as a culture. I don't think any of those statues are put up in reverence for practices that those individuals might have participated in that are unseemly or that people are in disagreement with. But this is part of our American heritage. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if this were Nazi Germany, what would we be doing?
Well, you know, they had the book burning there.
Right.
And that was, whenever you take away free speech, whenever you try to get rid of history, I think it's a dangerous time now. Susan Kochevar, what's your thoughts on this whole thing?
No, I have to agree with Sue on that. You know, one of the things we see with some of the wars going on in the Middle East is the destruction of historical monuments, and I'm sure those people had practices that we wouldn't agree with either, but they represent history, and we learn from history and try to do better. And I think it's a mistake to take those statues down. We can argue about whether government should be putting up statues. That might be a fair argument. But to go in the middle of the night and take things down without even asking your constituents, that bothers me.
Yeah, that power piece. You know, they make the decision arbitrarily on behalf of the citizens of that area. And I fear that they're giving away too much to the mob mentality.
To the bullies. Yeah.
Exactly. And so they're empowering that dysfunctional behavior of those protesters and the mob out of fear.
You know, and Susan Kochevar, in America, the idea that people can speak and they may say things that are offensive. They may say things that other people may disagree with. But that right to be able to speak that, I think, is inherent in liberty and freedom. And so these groups that are trying to shut down voices that they disagree with is almost terrifying to me.
Oh, it absolutely is. For one thing, you want these groups to speak because you want to know they're there. Mm-hmm. It's easier to make your arguments against when you hear what they have to say. The other important issue is who starts to decide what speech is okay? Pretty soon they'll decide our speech isn't okay.
Right. Right. And that's what's so inherent about the First Amendment, that the founders realized that speech, whether or not it offends someone or, you know, whatever, is really, really important. We're almost to break. Sue Kinfield, do you have a last thought on this?
Yeah, I agree with Susan. And these people fail to understand, if you're willing to open the door for this, what happens when they start to take away history that you actually agree with?
Right. You know, and so will it be the Washington Monument? Will it be the Jefferson Memorial? And the thing that kids don't understand, that people don't understand today, is that slavery was prevalent throughout the world at that time. For this little country on the eastern seaboard to stand up and say, hey, we're gonna fight about this, we're gonna figure this out, it was something that was radical, and it was amazing. So when we come back, we're gonna be talking about a conservative heart. Is there such a thing? So we're with Susan Kochevar, Sue Kinfield. We'll be right back. When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516, or visit her online at karen-levine.com and tell her The Americhicks sent you. Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the American sent you.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Yes, welcome back. We are the Americhicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We hope you are having a terrific Tuesday. If you are stuck in traffic, you're lucky, because this is going to be a fabulous conversation. We're going to be talking about a conservative heart. Is there such a thing? And in studio, we have guest chick Sue Kinfield with See It Thrive and Susan Kochevar, owner of the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Molly's on vacation, so you've got the three of us, Sue, Susan, and Kim. And I think there's been a lot of questions out there whether or not there is such a thing as a conservative heart. Sue, what do you think?
I think absolutely there is. And somebody who encapsulated this, I think, really well was Arthur Brooks in his book, The Conservative Heart. And So for me, it represents something that he includes in his book, if I can just...
Sure, that'd be great.
And this was something that LBJ promised the Great Society would not accomplish when he gave his speech in the Rose Garden. And he declared, "We are not content to accept the endless growth of relief roles or welfare roles. We want to offer the forgotten fifth of our people opportunity and not doles. Our American answer to poverty is not to make the poor more secure in their poverty, but to reach down and help lift themselves out of the ruts of poverty and move with the large majority along the high road of hope and prosperity."
Well, those are noble words, but that's not what happened.
It is not what happened. To me, that encompasses what I think is the conservative heart. It is about lifting people up, giving them opportunity rather than giving them a handout, not keeping them dependent, which is a soul-sucking experience, in my opinion, but giving them the opportunity for earned success and the dignity that comes with that.
Well, I totally agree. And I think that in conservatism, we had somebody, another guest chick on last week, and she was talking about, and Susan, I'm going to throw this over to you, that sometimes it's kind of the feel-good thing to give somebody something immediately. In a way, it's almost kind of like, you know, then you've done your duty and they go away. Versus there's kind of that hard love in a way of making people, you know, work and have some skin in the game. And that, in essence, perhaps that is the more compassionate thing. That's the answer with more heart.
Sure. It lets people keep their dignity. And the point that Sue brought up goes to our founding. Benjamin Franklin talked about people being uncomfortable in their poverty and not, you know, so that they strive to do more and for themselves and take care of themselves. One of the things, we read this article that you passed out by
Russell Kirk.
Yeah. And it has like 10 different principles. And one of the principles kind of talks about, I think it was the first principle. It says, "The conservative believes that there exists an enduring moral order, that order is made for man and man is made for it." And that's kind of the point. Man is man and man will always be man. That means that he, you know, does well when he takes care of himself. And so that's, I think, part of what the conservative heart goes towards, taking care of yourself.
Well, you know, I think I mentioned this yesterday, and I'm going to mention it again on taking care of ourselves, which goes to kind of property rights. And there was a story, a friend of mine had told me that a friend of hers, little granddaughter, had gone to kindergarten. And his premise was that we are teaching socialism in kindergarten these days. And I remember when I was a kid that, you know, the first day of school, I mean, you got out and you got your supplies and you had your little box and you had your scissors and your glue and your pencils and all that. And I would look at them, I'd take them out, put them back in, you know, it was really exciting because school was going to start. And those were mine. I took those, I put that in my desk, and I was responsible for those. So the story goes like this, that this little girl, they'd gone to get their supplies for this season. And she went to school first day of kindergarten last week, and she'd gotten frozen scissors, you know, the frozen scissors of the movie, you know, and all these little girls just love that stuff. And she gets to school and she has to throw it to the communal basket. And so then when it comes time to do some cutting, some other kid, a little boy, comes over and grabs her frozen scissors, and she was just devastated. And so the lesson then, ultimately, what happens with that, Susan, is that next time they get school supplies, they're just going to get the mediocre school supplies. You know, they're not going to get something that, you know, she really likes, because, you know, I think the quality then will go down because of mediocrity.
Yeah, I had a similar experience when I went to school with our pencils, and the boys were, I was a little tiny kid, and they were all bigger than me, and I would get the really short pencils. You know, even though we had brought in pencils and I didn't, they were put into the community basket. Yeah.
So by the time you got to them, you got the short pencil, even though you brought a long pencil.
Huh? So the smaller kids get the leftovers. You know, it doesn't teach any sort of personal responsibility or taking care of your own things and keeping track of them, putting them away. It's awful.
Okay.
Right. Because there's no attachment. And attachment meaning... that I care about this, you know, this thing, and I'm going to take care of it. I have some pride in it because I went out and I selected it, the little girl. And I mean, this is kindergarten, did you say?
Kindergarten.
I mean, they're 5, 6 years old.
I know.
They're trying to learn how to share, which is great. And forced sharing is not sharing.
Forced sharing. Now, that is a novel. We're having a lot of forced sharing going.
Yeah.
And that is not, when people say that you don't have a heart because you don't want the government to take more of your money than they should to give to somebody else,
right.
I kind of think it's greedy for people to try to take more of your stuff to give to somebody else.
Well, it's yeah, sort of a
Sue Kimfield,
different, a different idea of fairness, you know, and I think that's where conservatives get called under the carpet of not having heart, not caring about people because they don't believe that the government should take and then redistribute. They don't think that's fair. We believe in something called meritocratic fairness,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, we each have abundant opportunity to pursue those things that make us happy. Like the kindergartner, she wanted those frozen scissors and she would have gotten a charge out of doing her work. I mean, how does that disengage her then in school,
right.
when she's forced to give up something that she was excited about using? And so I think people miss out on the damage that they do with the forced sharing. And it winds up being a heartless move rather than a heart-based move that the liberals like to think it is.
Yes. Susan Kochevar, you're shaking your head. Is there something you wanted to say?
Well, it's, you know, I have a heart. I don't want to see other people forced to give up their property.
Right.
You know, their money. When your money and your property is your time,
sure.
your life.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to get to, you have recently had something that was published. And I think we're going to get to that in maybe one of the next segments. Sue, before we go to break, we've got just a few minutes. You had mentioned something about the conservative heart and regarding the prison system.
Yes, the prison system. So I was really intrigued to learn about this prison entrepreneurship program where communities are identifying an opportunity to reduce recidivism in prisons and work with those who are going to be released to help give college or GED courses, vocational ed, high school and entrepreneurship courses. If people really understood, incarceration costs us about $80 billion a year. And so in looking at this program, they're teaching these men and women who are going to be released from the criminal justice system how to be entrepreneurs. And what they have found is, you know, when these people who go through this prison entrepreneurship program are released, there's a staff that meets them at the gates. They help them acquire identification, medical insurance, and basic necessities. They also own transitional housing for some of these graduates and help them find jobs. The results to date for some of these programs are a recidivate rate of just 7%. So it's significantly impacting whether or not these people go out and commit crime again,
mm-hmm.
because I believe they're being given something meaningful to do. They feel like they are in charge of their life, that they have the opportunity to influence the trajectory of their life, and they've been given some skills so that when they get out, there's often such a stigma for people who leave the criminal justice system. It's difficult for them to get meaningful work that can actually support them, and they inevitably fall back into a life of crime. Mm. So the results from this type of program are super promising, and it's in conjunction with Democrats and conservatives, with all the hyper-partisanship going on. This is one that both sides or all sides have been able to really get behind and see the benefit. And for me, it's about lifting these people up, you know, helping them understand you are capable, you are able. And when people get that message and then it's backed up with a set of skills that they can go apply on their own and be the master of their own life to some degree, I just think that's more of what we need in this world rather than handing somebody a welfare check and encouraging them to live a life that's limited.
Right. And Sue Kinfield, I think that's a good point. By just handing something to someone, in a way, I think that it's you're saying to that other person that you don't have something of value that you can create. You don't have something of value to offer to me. And I think that that is probably one of the meanest, cruelest things that you can say to another person. Because if, in fact, you have something of value that we can trade, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that means, Susan Kochevar, that that that's inherent that I respect you. Yeah. That and I think that that's what America was really founded on. It wasn't until the 60s until we really got into this. And you've seen the effects of this. You've seen what's happening in the inner city, seeing all the deaths in Chicago. And, you know, I really think that if we get back to the conservative heart that we're talking about here today, I think that we're going to lift a lot of people up.
Yeah. Excuse me. It's devastating what it does. You know, this reminds me of some things that Bono has recently come out and said, probably in the last, 5 years, talking about charities. You know, he's given lots and lots of money to foreign countries to try to help them. And one of the things he discovered was instead of giving them, you know, shoes or food or whatever, it's better to teach them how to start their own businesses. You know, you can't start your own shoe business or egg business with chickens if somebody's coming in and giving your potential customers free eggs or free shoes.
Good point.
So this is what Bono has run around, has discovered, and you can find all sorts of YouTube speeches that he has. Fabulous, fabulous speeches.
Well, that's, and it's so interesting that you would mention chickens and eggs, because you've had the piece that you wrote for Complete Colorado, or was in Complete Colorado, really kind of talks about that. Is it's difficult, as you mentioned, for the entrepreneur to compete when government is coming in and subsidizing another business. To that point, though, of value for value, I wanted, before we go to break, I've mentioned this before, but one day I was working on my computer and there was a knock on the door and there were a couple of kids from down the street and they had their baseball uniform on, and one of them said, "Hey, my team's going to the National World Series and we're trying to raise money. Would you mind giving me some money?" And I'm kind of like, ugh. And I'm thinking about it. And I said, "You know what? I won't give you any money. But I tell you what, if you want to sweep my sidewalks, I need to have my sidewalks swept, I'll pay you." And they kind of looked at each other like, what a novel idea. So we went out and we took a look at my sidewalks and we agreed upon a price. And I got the broom out and they swept my sidewalks. And I said, "You know, I think it's important that, you know, we have value for value instead of just asking for money." And they go, "Yeah, I guess that's a pretty good idea." But it was important to me. And then a couple of days later, I had another young man that came and was selling very high priced cleaning products. And I did the same thing. I said, "I don't need those cleaning products, but I need my sidewalks swept." So, and so anyway, I thought that that was important because it was really value for value. So we have Susan Kochevar in studio, as well as Sue Kenfield. They're our guest chicks while Molly is on vacation. And we're talking about the conservative heart. So this is the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim will be right back.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, August 11th, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include The Emoji Movie, Dunkirk, and Annabelle. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Be sure to try the delicious funnel cake with up to four toppings to choose from. For more information on movie showings and times, visit 88drivein.net and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. And in studio, we have a couple of guest chicks with us. Susan Kochevar with 88 Drive-In Theater and Sue Kenfield with See It Thrive. Before we jump into our conversation, Susan Kochevar, you are the owner of the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. You've been in business for 41 years. And just tell us a little bit about, what's the movies coming up this weekend?
Well, we're back by popular demand. Have
Dunkirk,
thank you. They run together after a season.
After a while, yeah.
Yes, and then we have the scary movie Annabelle, and finally Dark Tower.
Okay.
Three movies, $8 per person, children under 12 are free.
And so what time do you open the gates?
The box office will open at 6:30 on Friday and Saturday. Make that 5:30 on Friday and Saturday, 7 o'clock Sunday through Monday.
Okay. And you have one of Molly's favorite foods, funnel cake. And I think you have four different toppings or something, right?
We're up to five now that my staff keeps coming up with them. So we have chocolate, strawberry, and then marshmallow got added. Caramel was added. And recently, a peanut butter topping.
Oh, my.
So if you put peanut butter and marshmallow together, it makes a fluffernutter funnel cake, really took a lot of practice to say, but it's delicious.
You said it well.
It sounds pretty good. So that's the 88, the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. And Sue Kenfield, just quickly, you have See It Thrive, and tell people just a little bit about your business.
Yeah, so I go into organizations that are struggling with interpersonal conflict, leaders who struggle with the drama and dysfunction that so often accompanies the human condition, people wasting all kinds of time on personality conflicts or inevitably misunderstandings, really, taking away from productivity. And, I mean, the human condition can be somewhat intimidating to deal mm-hmm. with, and I love wading in where it's messy. That's sort of my bailiwick.
I think maybe you should get on a plane and go to Washington, D.C., because yeah, well, I think it's going to be real interesting here.
It would be great. I'm not sure many of them care.
Well, that may be. So, hey, we are talking about the conservative heart. And it's always kind of shocked me when people think that conservatives don't have heart, because one of the most compassionate things that you can do, Susan Kochevar, is give another person a job. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that. Yeah. Because you are in business. And what we've seen is, because of rules and regulations and minimum wage and a whole bunch of things, is it makes it difficult for you to do the compassionate thing of giving someone a job.
It does. There's a couple of things. We don't look quite at jobs the way we should. Even when you have a job, you are still your own business person. You are trading your time and skill for pay. Mm-hmm. And the employer, of course, wants their money's worth. That's why they set a time on lunches and different things. And just structure has to go a certain way so the productivity happens. But yeah, one other thing, we all have this big sheet that we have to keep in our business that says, but for us, the government would do all the business would do all this terrible stuff to you. And if they do all these things, call us. That is a giant propaganda sheet.
And you have to have that posted, like in the lunchroom, don't you?
Yeah. Otherwise, you get massive fines. I can't remember the fines, like $20,000 or $50,000 if you don't have the correct one with the correct comma up. Mm-hmm. But that to me is propaganda. You know, my employees are my very best asset.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Even though I run a business that, you know, it's a theater and I have kids, young people, they still come in with new ideas. Every single year, something new gets implemented just because they see things differently.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I think people are by far and away the greatest asset that any organization has, provided that you can help them show up at their best, that you are a leader that can draw that from people. Mm-hmm. And this idea that the government is in competition for their hearts and minds with mm-hmm. the employer, that, you know, we are here to protect you. And granted, there were some practices back in the day where employees might have needed some of that protection. But I think, you know, the majority of employers do the right thing. And that constant battle of you trying to engage these people in a way that lifts them up so that they can do their very best at mm-hmm. this job that they're being paid to do. They can take pride in their work product and they can feel good about growing something together and then maybe someday going out on their own and growing mm-hmm. their own thing and having employees of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that work is somehow a punishment instead of a reward is part of what the government has driven through mm-hmm. some of these regulations.
Now, I'm going to date myself. Now, I was not alive when Disney's Snow White first came out, because I think that came out like in the 30s or something. But I do remember one of the big hits from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was Whistle While You Work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was kind of things that kids grew up with. It was, you know, you had your property rights at school of your stuff. And I remember on the playground, all those free market words, like if somebody came up and told you to do something, you'd like say, who says, make me, you know, all of those freedom kind of things. And now we're seeing all of this victimhood. And in fact, I saw a headline this week, or actually it was today, that in a kindergarten class that they were teaching about transgender.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember when my kids were little, we were just trying to get them to stand in line, you know, and not talk and keep their hands to themselves.
Right.
I'm like, what has happened to education where we're talking about, you know, things that I don't think are even on most kids' minds, and then, you know, and making kids victims. I mean, what has happened to us here in America? What do you, Susan?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's something that should be under the purview of the school, period.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I'll just say that's...
And we're graduating kids that many of them can't really read and write. I mean, I know even with some of my son's friends, when they graduated from high school, they had to take remedial classes to get into university. And it's like, we need to be making sure that we're giving kids the tools that they can go on and go out and pursue their hopes and dreams.
You're absolutely right. I hire kids who are 16, 17, 18. I have to teach them their multiples of 8 so that they know how much to charge my customers. And these are smart kids. Right. But not this stuff is not being taught in the schools, and they quickly learn to memorize their multiples of 8 so that they can charge customers, and I have to teach them how to make change in things. They don't seem to feel they're capable
of thinking
or memorizing. It's really an interesting thing.
Well, and that's the sad consequence, I think, of people usurping parenting. And and we're going to be the ones to teach your kids about sexuality before you get that opportunity. And this idea, I was really distressed to see a recent story about young people being interviewed about whether or not they'd want to go stand in line in Venezuela for food, or see our country do more on income inequality. And a lot of these young people felt like it would be better for them to go stand in line all day for food in Venezuela because that's more noble than this quote-unquote income inequality that we have, this income redistribution, the Bernie Sanders supporters and the Elizabeth Warren supporters, these young people who really believe that socialism would be a good thing. There's nothing more heartbreaking for me than to imagine people having a limited view of what their potential is, that's driven by a government that says you are unable and you are incapable, so therefore we must do it for you. And I think a lot of our underserved communities hear that message all too often, driving a life of dependency generation after generation after generation, and people not developing that belief that I think therefore I am and I can actually take a stab at pursuing my dreams, that I have talents that God gave me when I came into this world that our world needs me to express. And therefore, whether I fall on my face and I fail until I get it right, they're saddled with this idea that they're incapable. You need someone else to do it for you. And the loss of critical thinking and things that we've talked about before. I just find that so heartbreaking because I'm such a deep believer in the human potential.
I think it's cruel. Instead of being compassionate, I think it's cruel when we use government policy to keep people dependent. And when we don't teach our kids that each one is unique and they're precious and they have something to offer. And to teach kids that they're victims and not make sure that they have the tools to go after their hopes and dreams, I think is cruel.
Yeah, it's part of not teaching. They teach them not to compete. And that's not the way the world works.
No.
And we've heard that kids then that have graduated and everybody got a trophy. I mean, I think that it makes it really difficult for them to function in the world.
Yeah.
And so as we talk about compassion, we realize that these foundational principles of what has made America great, as far as competition and going after your hopes and dreams and having the possibility that you can fail, actually is very compassionate. And so that means that, yes, there is a conservative heart. So this is Kim Munson. Molly's on vacation. We are with Sue Kinfield with See It Thrive and Susan Cochevar with 88 Drive-In Theater. And we are talking about the conservative heart. So we're going to be in our last segment, ladies. I can't believe it.
Wow.
So we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll finish this up.
And now, the Lens of Liberty. Here is Helen Creeble.
Like millions of other Americans, I recently replaced some windows with more energy-efficient windows, thinking I was saving on energy bills and being a responsible citizen. But I found out that even something simple as replacing a window requires a permit from the county, and the fees that go with it. Building permits were originally for public safety, and none of us want buildings to collapse. But if we look through the lens of liberty, we realize that too often such permits are not really about safety, but about revenue for the county. Some advocates may want to protect me from an installation that may not save as much energy as I wanted, But isn't that really my responsibility? Americans believe in limited government because we believe in self-government. We need the government to protect us from foreign invaders, not from drafty windows.
For more information, go to lensofliberty.org. That's lensofliberty.org.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. Molly's on vacation, so we have a couple of great guest chicks in studio with us. Susan Kochevar with 88 Drive-In Theater and Sue Kinfield with See It Thrive. And just a quick question, ladies. Do you ever have computer challenges, Susan?
All the time.
How about you, Sue?
You betcha.
You know what, ladies? You're going to be in luck because mid-September, Evan, your IT guy, is going to be live. It's a brand new company. And it's a network of IT professionals ready to provide on-demand help with your computer needs 24/7. And check out EvanYourITGuy.com. And right now, if you go to their website, scroll to the bottom, and under the Discover tab, you'll see free webcam cover. And just sign up, fill out all that information with your mailing address, and mention the AmeriChicks, and you will get a free webcam cover, which is really a handy-dandy thing. Molly had all this sticky tape on her computer, so this looks much chicer. And oh, just like Susan, I think you better go do this. You need to sign up with Evan, your IT guy, and get rid of that tape on your computer. So
yeah, that'd look better.
So that's EvanYourITGuy.com. They plan to go live mid-September, and we are just really excited to let you know about that. So let's finish up, ladies. This has gone very quickly. We have two other things we want to talk about. First thing, during break, and it kind of segued with what we were talking about, Sue Kinfield. You mentioned the Arthur Brooks book, The Conservative Heart, and he talked about learned helplessness.
And it kind of goes to what we were talking about in the last segment, where the kids are not learning critical thinking. They're learning to be dependent on somebody else to either do it for them or tell them how it's supposed to be done rather than thinking through it. And this idea that I'm unable or I'm incapable, so therefore I need the government to do it for me, which is prevalent among young people who believe that socialism is the way to go. I mean, if those kids could really live what's happening in Venezuela, I think they might have a change of heart. But it's romanticized for them in whatever they're learning, whether it's in high school or in college or at home. This idea that, you know, we have to take care of people by having an increased minimum wage. Well, how about if we give them skills so they could actually get a true living wage job? Because that's what people really want. Deep down inside, they want to have meaning in their life.
They do.
They want to feel like they're actually able to have some control over the trajectory of their life. When you agree to live a life that's completely provided by the government, you lose your power. You give your power away to that entity, if you will. And that is not how human beings were intended to live.
You know, and Sue Kinfield, as you mentioned this regarding our education system, last week we had on our World War II Project Day, Otto Lyons, and he is 94 years old, and he was a glider pilot. And these are, I didn't really realize what this was. I mean, this was amazing. They would go in behind enemy lines. He said that when they went in Operation Market Garden, that they were actually taking small arms fire, like rifle and pistols. But he said, interesting, and Operation Market Garden was depicted in the movie A Bridge Too Far. And what had happened is the Allies had pushed, Montgomery had pushed a little bit too far, and they didn't get all the bridges. And what he said is that he had witnessed a couple of the commanders, one from the Brits and one from the Americans. The Americans, they were at the bridge. They're like, let's go. We need to take this bridge. But the Brits were waiting for the hierarchy to give them the order to do so. And I was thinking, and he said, the Brits are great fighters, but they were always waiting for orders. Mm. Where that American spirit is, you see something that needs to get done, and you do it. And I thought that that was so interesting. And in our education system now, we're training kids to wait for somebody to tell them to do something.
Absolutely. I can give a structure to my staff, and I see invariably new kids that come along, and they can't extrapolate. We handle this way, so we must handle this other item this way also. That connection doesn't happen. They have to come ask every time, and that asking for every single thing they do or go ahead and start, and that's really sad.
And so you are training these kids. Mm-hmm. And Molly and I have both said our first jobs, instead of us being paid, we should have paid them. And so now I hear you are a small business person, and you're being forced to pay a minimum wage But yet you're training these kids. You're giving them skills for life.
Mm-hmm.
And as a small business person, you really get squeezed. And we're going to go over to this last thing that we want to talk about. And Susan Kochevar, you had a very excellent piece that was in the Complete Colorado, wasn't it?
Complete Colorado, page 2, they call it.
Okay.
Yep.
And it was August 21st, 2017. It's a guest editorial, Corporate Favoritism by Cities Harms Small Business. Well, you know, I was on city council, and I kind of started to see this. And I'm like, wait a minute. In the vision of the declaration, everybody's supposed to be equal under mm-hmm. government. And what I started to see is that incentives were being given in the name of economic development to big corporations. But I'm thinking, how is this fair that they're getting a break on their business personal property tax or share back of sales tax or a variety mm-hmm. of things over here for the big guy? And the little guy over here is having to pay business personal property tax. I don't know if you know this, listeners, but little businesses have to pay on their tables and their chairs and their ovens and all kinds of things like that, in addition to all the other taxes that you pay.
Yeah, you pay that business personal property tax in perpetuity.
For a long time.
Thank you. Yes,
forever.
I know. Came out in my head. So it's like paying sales tax on things that you bring home forever. It's no
right.
different.
Right.
So, yeah. And so the small businesses wind up subsidizing the big businesses. You know, I would love to grow my business, but I am subsidizing these bigger businesses. They get tax rebates and they can come in and compete with me and set up their business model and their pricing structure based on reduced taxes. And I can't do that. And I have to compete with them. It all started with the city of Westminster. They are redeveloping what used to be the Westminster Mall area. And they've given the Alamo Draft House $700,000 in tax rebates.
So $700,000 would go a long way in your little business, wouldn't it?
It would. I went to about 4 years ago. We're located in the city of Commerce City. So I went to discuss expanding. Yes, customers, I hear you. We need more room. And I got an Excel spreadsheet of expected licenses, fees, and permits of $80,000. And that's just expected. You know, small businesses, any business needs, you know, stability and you need certainty. And how can I make a business plan on expected license taxes and fees? And $80,000, what does that buy me? Nothing. That's before I ever even break ground or buy the property.
Wow. Now, were you one of those businesses that had to put in one of those goofy extra sinks that was really expensive? I've heard the different businesses have had to do that.
They went around trying to do that. They attempted to do that to me also. This was the Tri-County Health Department, but I think all the state health departments were doing it, even though we'd had our sink for 20 years and never made anyone sick, and it's big enough to fit all of our items and clean things very well. And also, we don't have things that come, you know, we don't hand food or plates to the customer that come back that need to be washed. So all of our stuff is disposable. But they wanted me to put in a new sink, which would have, by the time I got done with construction and putting in my hand sink, because it would have destroyed all of this area that I had to rebuild, would have cost me about $10,000. I was trying to make the leap from 35 millimeter projectors to digital cinema, which cost me $100,000. I didn't have $10,000 extra. And you can't make...
Because you're on really small margins.
Yeah, this is regulations for the sake of regulations. And you just can't make businesses take on that kind of debt because it makes them unstable. Debt is very destabilizing. And when you destabilize all small businesses, you lose your tax base.
Yeah. You know, Susan, there's one other thing I wanted to mention. And that is... all of these different, like, concerts in the parks and thing. We had a conversation about this last mm-hmm. time I saw you, because when I was on city council, I'm like, oh, this is nice that we're doing concerts in the park. I mean, community can come together. But yet there was something inherently in that I'm thinking, wait a minute, something's not quite right here. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to my neighbor the other day, and I'm like, wait a minute, how is it fair that the businesses generate the tax revenue for the city, and then the city goes out and does an event that competes with your business?
Yes, and not only that, but the citizens who could really use their money, is their tax money has been forced out of them for something when they need to buy food. You really see this in rec centers where now they're doing massage and exercise and painting classes and all these things, that huge booklet gets mailed out to the whole community. I don't know how much that costs, but that is all competing with private business.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't say, I don't have money for that this month. And the other thing is, the citizens can't tell how much they're really paying for something. How much are you paying for the exercise class? It comes out in your taxes. And also, when you go to the rec center, you're paying for
the class.
For that class also. And these people can suck up tax money to keep refurbishing the rec center. Small businesses can't do that.
Right. That seems heartless to me, mm-hmm. Susan Kochevar. So final thoughts, Susan Kochevar, and then we'll go to you, Sue.
Well, thanks for having us. Come out and check out the 88 Drive-In in Commerce City. You can find us at 88drivein.net.
Right. And those movies are Dunkirk, Annabelle, and Dark Tower this week.
Yep.
So that's that'll be a fun event. And Sue Kinfield, thank you so much for being here and your final thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I think just remember, you know, we all have hearts. And while we might go about doing things differently, I believe the conservative movement is about lifting people up.
Well, agreed. And pushing people, encouraging people, empowering people to be the very best that they can is inherently American. It's unique about the American idea. And we started this show talking about all of these statues being taken down. And everybody that's doing this is they are looking backwards. I mean, I think in many of these cities, we may have mayors who are black, you know, and so I think that we would be celebrating that versus trying to tear things down. So I think that this is really more about power. I think it's more about suppressing free speech. I think that it's more about bullying. And I think if people really cared, if they really had a heart for others, we would be doing something about what's going on in inner city Chicago. We would be doing something about what is going on in our inner city schools. We would be doing something about our education system so that, in fact, we're giving our kids tools so that they can go after their hopes and dreams instead of trying to, quote unquote, make them widgets for a workforce in some point in time in the future. So, we have just, I like just one quick final thought, yeah. Sue.
Agreed. I don't think removing historical statues is going to do one positive thing to move this country forward in the ways that we need to move forward. It's about suppressing history so people feel good and they feel empowered to be dysfunctional.
And Susan Kochevar, final thought.
Well, you know, the other thing I think we forget is sometimes those folks had to be rather pragmatic. Jefferson couldn't actually release all of his slaves because they would have come taxed him and taken his entire farm away from him, and all those people he educated would have lost everything. Just like you can't say, I'm just not paying taxes anymore because I don't believe in the IRS. You are still a person of your time.
Right. And so we have to work within the confines of what we have mm-hmm. to continue to push forward. So with that, I'm going to leave with a Ronald Reagan quote. He says, we're blessed with the opportunity to stand for something, for liberty and freedom and fairness. And these are things worth fighting for, worth devoting our lives to. Those are the things we need to aspire to, ladies. So Sue Kinfield, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Susan Kochevar, thank you so much. Two of our favorite chicks.
Thank you.
Have a great evening. We'll see you tomorrow.